Well, I'm really happy to be here. I have been invited to tell a story of this project that I worked on in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, for pretty intensively for about 3 years. And the project is ongoing. It's called the Five Faiths Project. And in order to tell a story, it's important to situate it just a bit. This work happened in a university art museum in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, in a part of the state. Central North Carolina is a state that is undergoing some rapid cultural shifts. It's the sixth fastest Jewish, fastest growing Jewish population in the country, the Research Triangle Park. There are new Hindu temples and mosques going up, expanding, dividing into subgroups. It's a time of great cultural change. To situate myself, I grew up in Appalachia in the western part of North Carolina. And when I grew up, I was aware of two Jewish families in my community and one Catholic family. It's a Protestant, you know, hotbed. I guess one statistic that I learned in the course of doing this project is that North Carolina is one of the most religiously homogeneous states in the United States, 43% Southern Baptist. But I found myself working in a multicultural collection of art, and included the only collection of Asian art in the state. And I found myself talking with a lot of people about these collections. And the project, the story, really begins with visitors' questions. Who is that lady in the blue dress? It's a common question. In fact, one of my early teaching experiences, I'd been asked to design a lesson plan on Renaissance painting, and was assured that the eighth graders had been studying the Renaissance for a long time, and so I carefully prepared to talk about stylistic developments. And halfway through this specialized gallery lesson for people who had been studying the Renaissance, someone said, "Who is that lady in the blue dress?" And when I asked how many other people were wondering about that, half of the group. So I learned something about making assumptions about who people were and what they would know. Why does that guy have such long earlobes? The objects stimulate these questions, and very quickly and very naturally, we find ourselves having rich, complicated conversations about religion. That story about how Ganesha got an elephant's head, is that true? These are the questions that I started to get really excited about. And, you know, that's a complicated question. Is that true? So I felt, I began to have a growing conviction that these were very important conversations. It was clear to me that, especially for many of our school visitors, this was their first time being exposed to the very idea that there were there was more than one religion in the world. Okay, and so I left as a museum educator thinking, well, if that's the one idea that people leave with after an hour in an art museum, I'll take it. That's an important idea. So this is at the heart of the work that we started to do. I went to my director, Jerry Bolas, and said, you know, these conversations about world religions seem pretty important. I'd really like to turn it into a project, but we have outstanding examples of Christian, Buddhist, and Hindu art, but nothing to represent Islam and Judaism. And of course, you would want a very inclusive collection, but I don't feel that it's really possible to say you're working on a world religions project without including Islam and Judaism. And so this is an institutional decision that I think is remarkable, and I sort of hold it up to celebrate this director said, okay, I think you're right. This project needs to happen. And of course we need to represent these two traditions. And then we start hitting the problems with museum culture because we didn't have a curator with expertise, with academic expertise in either of those traditions. We didn't have anything in the collection. And so we asked for outside help. Imagine that. we contacted a curator in Brooklyn, Leila Diba, who knew a lot about Islamic art, and she advised us on a small group that was especially purchased to start introductory conversations about Islam. Now again, that's controversial because you're selecting objects because of their teaching potential. And we had to have big conversations about, but we're an art museum, remember they must be beautiful. You know, and I said, okay, let's let them be beautiful and instructive. Since we're only going to get a handful of Islamic objects, let's just work from that premise. So this was one of the first objects that was acquired. It's a 19th century Quran. And what about Judaism? Because we found, as we started learning about the market, that Judaica was hard to come by and very expensive. We ended up borrowing a group of objects that had to do with the Torah from the Jewish Museum in New York. They were very generous in lending some objects. But eventually, 2 years later, we made our first two purchases of Judaic ritual objects, and then, lo and behold, a collector emerged from our community who wanted to give some more things to the Ackland Art Museum. So, in this way, the collections began to grow and be shaped in response to this educational project. We did this installation, we put the Jewish and Muslim ritual objects together. There was also a music station where people could listen to sacred music. Oh, this is a Hanukkah by John Cogswell from the 1990s. public school teachers in North Carolina could get themselves really nervous thinking about teaching about world religions, and we realized that we had a real responsibility to be well-versed in the legal issues in this kind of teaching and to support school-based educators in doing this work in a legal and effective and appropriate way. So we wanted to develop some curricular materials. And I felt very strongly that even though we were on a university campus, we shouldn't just go with scholarly perspectives, that we needed to learn from insiders in each of these faith traditions. And so we were fortunate to win a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts and establish two artist residencies. This is Wendy Ewald, the adult, working with Dina Kong, who's, I think she's about 9 years old then, in Greensboro, North Carolina. This is a Cambodian Buddhist community. But Wendy Ewald is a well-known photographer who teaches children how to use cameras to show something about their experience. We set up a series of workshops with five different religious communities where Wendy gave this camera instruction. And they're Polaroid cameras, but it's a large format negative, so you can get really very detailed prints. It's called Monk Raking by Shamron Kong. This is by Linda Tan. Linda Tan was one of those students who just took lots and lots of photographs. She was excellent. I wanted to make the point that these artist residencies resulted in relationships that we worked hard to sustain. This Cambodian community was about an hour away from Chapel Hill, but they were most proud of their classical dancers. So we invited them to perform at the museum while the exhibition of children's photography was on view. In each of the communities, the project had a little bit of a different life. In the Muslim community, we worked with a school group of fifth graders, but in general, we weren't working with schools. We were working in the faith community setting. Oh, I love this image. It's by Erin Spritzer. It's called Mezuzah Motions. And she said about this picture, this picture is about the next step you're about to take, not just a step into a Jewish household, but your next step in life. She was in fourth grade when she said that. And this was the opening at the Ackland. The photographs were juxtaposed with a ritual object, a beautiful, old, rare object, surrounded by these contemporary images of religious communities in North Carolina. And it made the point, that we wanted to make, because the advantage of teaching with this kind of collection is that the objects stimulate these rich conversations, but I think people sometimes did leave feeling like, well, that Hinduism, that's really interesting. It happened a long time ago in India. And so I really felt that it was an important role for the museum to take to make it clear that this is a contemporary and local presence. The goals of the project, as we sort of defined them for a grant, were to engage diverse cultural communities in the life of the museum in a meaningful way, to experiment with new approaches to the collection, to support schools in teaching about world religions, to position the museum as a forum for interfaith dialogue and understanding. And that was controversial. I had to sort of fight for that because the director said, no, no, that's claiming too much, interfaith dialogue and understanding. Really, part of what this work demanded is that we start to broaden the idea of what the museum might be beyond a repository for beauty. And I think that it's very important kind of work to introduce these ideas, especially as the state and the country sort of struggle with these new diversity issues. I feel like growing up in North Carolina, with the history that I'm aware of there, it's one of those places that could go either way. There's a history of bigotry and suspicion of outsiders, and I really wanted my work and the museum to do whatever we could to tilt the balance towards that Southern hospitality possibility, which is also part of who we are. The second artist in residence was a storyteller. This is Louise Omoto Ketzel. And again, we're going to convene five groups of people of faith to learn to perform stories. And the grant was that we were going to do these workshops and then make a recording that would have one story from each of the five religious traditions that we were working with. We ended up, well, and as an administrator, educator, the exciting part of this was I went into it thinking, okay, this is a public program where people will learn to tell stories. And halfway through, I realized, oh no, this is a new volunteer force. And it was real. I mean, and I articulated that to them because that's how they were acting. And it was absolutely right. This was our new volunteer force. And it was, an incredible diverse group of 60 people who were learning about the museum for the first time and sharing their stories and their lives, first with each other, then with the general public in the course of sort of public performances among the photographs. But that project grew and grew because after the 8-week workshops, people didn't want to go home and we didn't want them to. And so we kept meeting with them on a weekly basis, a monthly basis, for the next 3 years, and got a follow-on grant that expanded so that we were sponsoring story performances in faith community settings and community college settings, as well as at the museum. So Louise is a very inspiring performer and teacher. We ended up not really being able to do the grant the way we had planned because the material that these storytellers came up with was so rich that we ended up making 5 one-hour recordings instead of the one that we had budgeted for. The point of the recordings is we really want to produce curricular materials, and these materials will be available in the coming academic year. We did a series of 5 posters featuring works from the collection, and again, I love this one because after the museum sort of got warmed up into collecting Islamic art, with some small things, they ended up really investing in this mosque lamp. So the museum was so proud of this, you know, mosque lamp. But when we were designing the poster, I took it to my Muslim storytelling group, who were volunteer advisors at that point, and I said, what do you think of this design? And they said, well, the mosque lamp is really nice, but the Quran is central. So put it in the place of honor. So this is the final design that everybody was happy with. Each one features a work of art and a quote from a sacred text. And it's continued in this vein. This is a recent installation of Tibetan material. Do you want to hear voices of some of the people who were involved in this? Here's a photographer, 12-year-old from Bethel Synagogue. It was a great experience. I shot a lot of stuff. I shot things in the synagogue. I shot the menorah. And at home, I shot some of the things we did during the holidays. I learned something about how to convey ideas through pictures. What I was trying to do was explain to non-Jewish people what the religion is about and what we do. I got a lot out of that. But a lot of what I learned was not so much from what I shot as it was from other group shot. I interacted with some of them and I learned some of what they were all about. That was the whole idea. Then Louise is talking about a performance in a black Pentecostal church in rural North Carolina. She's writing me after I left the museum, nothing like this has ever happened in Pittsburgh ever before, I think I can safely say, and people felt inspired and drawn together in unity. An event hosted by a black Pentecostal church and co-sponsored by a white Episcopal one. A Jewish storyteller, a Hindu storyteller, and a Muslim storyteller, along with gospel music from the Austin Chapel male choir, personal My Call to Preach stories from Curtis Dean and Franco, and a Latin folktale from Carmen. Before her story, Curtis Dean spoke about how the project had really helped her understand more about other faiths and how much commonality there was between them. This actually would be a very remarkable statement for this woman to make as she introduced people that she had come to know through this process. The whole thing is about relationship, and these leaders in the Hindu community, Dr. and Mrs. Sharma, were very generous with their expertise. The relationships continue. We are able to take public school teachers into all of these faith communities to see firsthand some of the ritual and to talk with insiders in the tradition. Joyce wanted me to speak real briefly about, okay, what's happening in Washington now. The formidable Smithsonian starting to make some inroads there. This is an exhibition, Worshiping the Ancestors, full of paintings that look a lot like that. And I thought, you know, and I'm not a China specialist, but I had to wonder what's happening with ancestor worship today. And so we're starting to work with teenagers to do some documentary work that will give some insider and contemporary perspectives. Of course, it has to be all very polished and presented in the, you know, Smithsonian standards. There were some problems with that, meeting deadlines, but it was very rewarding. We worked with these 17 Chinese-American teenagers for about 6 months, teaching them skills of documentary research. And they ended up taking some original photographs and collecting photographs from family albums and doing a lot of original interviews that gave our visitors, you know, some contemporary perspectives. And some people really loved that. Currently, we're preparing for an exhibition on Chola bronzes. And again, we're working with local Hindu teenagers to talk about how processional bronzes are used now. So they're doing another documentary research project, but they're also, we're going to have a teen guide program. And the last thing is that we're starting another community-based storytelling project, and I met with 20 people who have cultural origins to the Silk Road. So we have a grant to start doing that kind of work. Many barriers to it. I would say someone earlier talked about how people in museums are afraid. And I think that there is this fear of, you know, being inaccurate somehow or not meeting the standards that can be paralyzing. And my main wish would be that we could all get a little more comfortable with being less perfect. Mm-hmm.